I think it was 1986 when we finished reading of the complete genetic information of a virus. That was the bacterial virus. By today's measures, it was very small. It was just 20,000 letters. Now we, for instance, the human genome has 3 billion letters, so you can see the difference. But that was the time when genomics really started. And we were one of the first groups in the world, I must say, to finish the complete genome. The bacterial virus we sequenced, the PZA, is a virus that infects certain types of bacteria. And of course, we identified all the genes so that we can have now a very deep insight in the life cycle of this virus. That is not of primarily practical value, but rather of theoretical basis for other experimentation with the bacterial viruses. At that time, it was, I think, a fine achievement, and based on this, we were invited then to join the major project, the flagship, really, of the European Union in biological sciences, and that was the genome project of a yeast, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And so it was a very important project, and we were invited to participate in this, and so we really sequenced large portions of chromosome 15 of this yeast.
And apart from the bacterial virus and the yeast, which other organisms have been studied at the institute?
This is a large or relatively large institute, so there are many projects going on. My own field is genomics, so I should perhaps mention these projects. And one of my former students now has an independent group, and he does excellent work on development of eye. The eye is an interesting organ. It was an organ from which even Charles Darwin has a headache. How such a complicated and complex organ could develop by natural selection. And at a molecular level, this can be studied by looking at genes that are behind development of an eye. And Dr. Zbigniew Kozmik from the Institute developed methods how to knock out genes, the regulatory genes, in fact, that are involved in development of eye. And so he can now follow the pathway of genes switching on and off to go to the eye structure. He is using even invertebrates in this. We are collaborating with him. We are reading genetic information and these genes. We are characterizing them. So that this is very interesting and I think very important project. We are also finishing up the complete reading of complete genome of an interesting bacterium, Rhodobacter capsulatus. Rhodobacter is bacteria that has complete photosynthesis. It has several other important metabolic pathways, for instance, for synthesis of vitamin B12. So this is something that we very much hope that we will be able to finish up this project. We collaborated on this with the University of Chicago, but the major part has been done here in Prague. And then the third major project that I personally am involved in is the comparative genomics of certain regions of human genome and the genome of our closest cousin, and that is chimpanzee. We have most of the genes identical or very similar with identical functions. And the question is, where is the information that makes us humans and that makes chimpanzee apes? This is something that has to be somehow encoded by the genetic information of the two species. We especially are interested in those genes in our genome that do not belong to us. It is interesting to realize that only 2% of our genetic material are genes that we use in our life. 98% of our genome is what we sometimes call junk DNA. It's not genes. It doesn't have the ordinary genetic information that we call genes. So when I say that 2% of our genome are genes, it is interesting that 4 times more, that is 8% of the genome, are remnants of genes that do not belong to us. They are of viral origin, in fact. Our predecessors were infected with viruses, the so-called retroviruses, and their genes integrated in our genome. They, of course, were not used, so they mutated. They are not functioning, but they still are there. This is also important, I think, to compare these genes of the viral origin with those genes that are in chimpanzee genome. Some of them we have in common, but some of them we do not have in common. Maybe that in these genes are something that triggered, really, the development towards a human being with all the specific features that we humans have. But that is already speculation, and I don't think that I should even say so.
I understand genomics is more about sitting at a computer than looking into a microscope. Is that right?
Well, sometimes it is called genetics in silico, genetics at a computer. I don't like when I see my students to sit at the computer the whole days, because I still feel that the experiment is the most important part of research. But certainly the in silico genetics is extremely important. For instance, this comparative projects of human and chimpanzee genome, it cannot be done without computers, of course. But sometimes it's even dangerous. There is even a joke about it, that there was a scientist who was specialist in genomics of sheep, and he found out that there is a farmer who breeds, and that he bred excellent flock of sheep, resistant to diseases and with excellent wool and meat and so on and so on. So he went there to buy one sheep and to bring it back to his lab and to isolate DNA out of it and read the genetic information and see what are the genes that are behind these excellent properties. So he went there and he asked whether he can buy one sheep, and the farmer told him yes, of course. So he bought one, he selected one animal, and when he was leaving, the farmer told him, "You must be one of these excellent new geneticist, probably in bioinformatics specialist in genomics." And the professor was flattered, and he said, "Well, yes, I really am the best expert in the genome of sheep. And how do you know it?" And the farmer told him, "Because the animal you selected is my dog." And that really shows that sometimes we are at the computer dealing with many genes and genomes of organisms that we've never seen before. We don't even know how they look like, but we know a lot about what's behind their life at the molecular level.